welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, hosted on the Daily Grind Cycling Journal. Visit us on the web at tailwind-coaching.com or like us on Facebook at Tailwind Coaching. And now, your host, Coach Rob.
All right, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I am Coach Rob, and we are here with a good show for you today, and particularly today, a show that's going to be geared towards beginner riders, and there's a very good reason for that, but we will get into that in just a few minutes' time. I would like to do a little bit of housekeeping, get a few announcements out there and a few things out there first. Number one, it is about a week away from the summer solstice and the beginning of summer. That means that people are going to be starting to think about their goals and their events for the end of the season. Along those same lines, I have released my Century Training Module, a 12-week module, which will help you, the cyclist who is maybe tackling a century for the first time or maybe looking to increase their speed on a century that they've performed in the past. It will give you a chance to build on your fitness. And it's a 12-week module that encompasses everything from a little bit of base work all the way up through build work and even a little bit of peaking work. It's meant to be a standalone module. However, and this is a big however, if you do not have some kind of base skills or base training prior to this module, you are going to have a bad time. I don't mean to sound like Mr. Mackey from South Park, but you are going to have a bad time, okay? I would recommend, if you are interested in this module, to consider also doing at least half of the base module. Okay, if you have been just doing no sort of structured training and you are just looking for some kind of structure to get you in shape for a century, but you've been riding since February, March, or April, you will probably be okay. All right, but that module has been released. It is completely finished. It is available for purchase and download, and you can find it in the downloadable training plans tab on my website, tailwind-coaching.com. Next piece of information, if you are on iTunes, which is one of the many places you can be listening to this podcast, please, if you like what you see, go ahead and rate it. And if you like what you see, please leave me a positive rating. Not only does it help with getting the podcast more exposure, but it also helps to motivate me to continue to produce these tips, tricks, and informational sessions for you. All right, so on iTunes, please give that a positive rating. If you're watching me, that's a little bit creepy since there's no way to watch me. If you are listening to me on Stitcher, Podbean, Blueberry, or on the website, indeed, go ahead over to iTunes, even if you aren't listening there right now, and rate this. Okay? Third order of business. A number of people have asked me recently regarding my SRAM Quark issues. I know a number of you on Facebook and some of you on Twitter, and even a couple of you in person have asked me as to the resolution of my issue with my SRAM, or actually not SRAM at this point, but my Quark Synchro. Synchro was actually what it was. For those of you who aren't entirely familiar, I'll give you a quick recap. I had one Synchro that died in December, right before the holidays. I had a second one that died in February, and the third one died right the day before racing Battenkill. Perfect way to start a crappy weekend, but I digress. You can listen to my Battenkill training, my Battenkill race report podcast if you really want that information. I don't need to go into it again. Suffice to say, After three dead Cinco Saturn units, Quark was kind enough to replace the unit with a SRAM Red Quark model, and assured me that at this point there would be no more issues. I am extremely pleased to say that after almost 2 months of literally abusing that Quark in every possible way that I can think of, it has held up extremely well. I've even hosed down, power washed, dunked, soaked. I've tried everything I can to get water into that new red exogram Quark. I've ridden in the rain. I've ridden in extremely heavy rain. I've washed the bike. I've rinsed the bike. I've sprayed the bike down with a hose. I've done pretty much anything I could just to get water into it. And I'm very pleased to say that I have not been able to do that. So, those of you who are considering purchasing a Quark power meter, I do highly recommend them. I highly recommended the Cinquo. It was a very good unit, except it had a little bit of a sealing issue. All of the new models, the Riken, the Elsa, the Red Exogram, and I believe there may be a new one coming out soon. I'm not entirely correct on that, but I'm not entirely sure on that, I should say, but do not hesitate with these models. These models have no problem with exposure, and honestly, they seem to be a lot more stable than the previous Cinquo. So that is a very, very good thing. All right, that being said, as always, if you're looking to find me and you're looking to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me via email. You can contact me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can contact me on Facebook at Tailwind Coaching on Facebook. You can contact me on Twitter, or if you just go to the website, tailwind-coaching.com, you can find almost a dozen different ways to follow me. Look in the upper right corner of any screen, and you will find a panel, I think is the word I'm looking for, a pane, for those of you who are familiar with old school HTML, a frame, that has all of my contact information right on it. So, all that being said and done, let's get to the meat and potatoes of today's show, and that is a beginner show, and it's going to or participating in group rides as a beginner cyclist. And we'll cover that right after this. All right, so this topic is stemming from the fact that over the last few weeks, the last month or so, I have seen a lot of discussion on forums, and I've also seen, I've also gotten some correspondence from people both online and in person about group riding as a beginner. And I believe part of this reasoning is because the weather here in the Northeast is finally beginning to cooperate, although the last few weeks have been a mishmash of rain and chilly and extremely, extremely hot. And nonetheless, I believe that people are finally starting to get out of their winter hibernation, and they're starting to hit the roads. And a lot of people that are just starting out riding, they've been riding solo for a number of years, are questioning, what do I do to get involved in a group ride? I want to experience this group ride. And I think part of the question that we have to ask, and that you have to ask yourself, is why is a group ride, as a beginner, so intimidating? In reality, there are a couple of factors that play into that, and including the fact that you're riding with a number of people. I mean, you could be riding with upwards of 20 or 30 other people. Now, for somebody who's used to riding alone all the time, just having that number of bodies around you in any given time can be extremely difficult. It can be extremely testing in terms of your ability to remain calm, relaxed, and keep yourself and others safe. All right, so just the plain number of people around you can be a bit of an intimidation factor. However, in many cases, other things that intimidate people is the fact that if you go out onto a group ride, and what I'm about to express is not limited to beginners by any matter of means. Don't take it that way. Every time you're out on a group ride, there is some semblance of your fitness being on display. Whether that means you are climbing with other people, or it's expected that, oh, so-and-so's on the group today, we're going to suffer a little bit. Or look at that guy, he looks pretty slow, I don't know, I'm not sure about that. Your fitness will be on display if you're on a group ride, and that can be a bit of intimidating thing. And that's intimidating even for people who've been riding with groups for years and years and years. I know from a personal standpoint, even if I have a day where my legs are not feeling good, I'm even still nervous when I sidle up to a group ride and I know my legs aren't in great shape. So that is a definite thing that can dissuade or intimidate a beginner from a group ride. But other things that can be intimidating are sort of impromptu competitions and certain group dynamics and group competitions. Mainly, in that respect, you'd be talking about things like the King of the Mountain competition between a couple of riders, or the club that will hit town line sprints or sprint for town line signs or something like that, or the coffee shop sprint, for lack of any better description. So these things can also be somewhat intimidating to beginners, especially if they're not sure if that's something they should be mixed up in, if it's something that maybe they feel the group, they need to be accepted into the group before they do such a thing. These are all intimidating factors for any beginner, or really anybody who's trying to join a group ride for the first time. Okay. So, with those factors out of the way, how do you, as a beginner, or even as a more experienced rider attempting to get other people onto your group ride, how do you allay these fears and make sure that people feel comfortable and are not afraid to join your group ride? Well, there's a couple of things you can do. And a lot of these actual things will start with how you or the ride leader is posting their group rides. Okay, and that would be to find out the group's dynamics a little bit. Now, I'm going to break this down into two things here, one of which will be sort of things that you can find out beforehand, and you'll find out really from these things, is that group ride going to be too little or too much for you, or is it just right? And one of the other things is, or the other category, will be things that you want to find out from the ride leader at the start of the ride. All right, so the first grouping, if you will, or the first category here, things you can find out from the way the ride is posted or the ride is discussed, you're going to want to find out simple things like speed, elevation gain, drop or no drop status, or other words, will they wait for you if you fall off the back of the group? If you can't keep the group's pace, are they going to wait for you? Or basically, are you on your own to find your way back to the starting point? Speed is obvious. That should be a pretty easy one to figure out, an average mile per hour speed. How many groups involved? Is there one group of people? Is there one group of 5 people, 10 people? Is there one group of 30 people? Or does that get broken into an A, B, or C group with, A being the fast guys, the racers, the old speed freaks? Well, and B being the your average fit recreational cyclist, and C being your people out for a good time, and that could even extend into D and maybe even E groups if you really wanted to go that far, but that could be found out from your ride posting, and elevation obviously again from ride posting. How many feet of vertical gain? Sometimes it's nice to either include or find out How steep are those feet of vertical gain? Is there a lot of steep climbing, or is it very gradual rolling terrain? Okay. Now, once you're at your group ride, or once you've arrived to lead your group ride or your leader or whatever, a good thing to make known to the group or to find out if you are the rider would be a couple of things, like if there are any outs in the route. If you are able, if you're getting tired, can you cut the route short? Can you cut around some of the steeper, tougher climbs? Are there water stops? Will there be, are there cue sheets available? A lot of rides don't even have cue sheets, although in this day and age with GPS technology, very many times a lot of rides will be given via GPS, ride with GPS cue sheets or ride with GPS courses, and people can program them into their own Garmin. Other things to figure out from the ride leader. Unspoken competitions, town line sprints, KOM competitions, anything like that. Coffee shop sprints. It's always nice to get yourself a free espresso at some point during your ride. And again, and you want to also reiterate, is it drop or no drop? And along with that, if it is a no drop ride, what are the regroup points and what is the regrouping policy of the group? You really don't want to, you may not want to tackle a ride that's no drop if it's one of your first group rides. So look for, if it's no drop, if it's drop. I'd have to rewind and check what I said, but let me reiterate. If it's a drop ride, you probably do not want to do that as your first group ride. Another thing is on the unspoken competitions, KOMs and sprints and things like that may also be a little bit too much for a beginner rider who's just jumping into group riding. So you may want to take that under consideration. But that being said, there are a few other things. Now I'm going to talk to the beginner cyclist or the first-time group rider or the new group rider, whatever you want to call yourself. I'm going to talk to you directly in this next point. And the next points are going to be tips for ensuring that you will have a good ride, your group will have a good ride, you'll be able to get out of the group ride what you are hoping to get. And hint, hint, there's another podcast out there about using group rides and not being afraid to use group rides for your training. So give that a listen if there's something you want to get out of it. But we'll discuss a little bit of that right after this quick break. All right. So you, the beginner rider, have decided that you want to, I gotta stop saying that. Beginner rider. You, the new group rider, have decided. Sounds much better, actually. That applies to much more people, even. But you, the new group rider, you've decided you're going to hit up one of the local group rides. You've decided, you've checked it out. You've seen the average speed. Maybe it's a 16-mile-an-hour group ride average. About 2,500 feet of vertical gain of climbing. Nothing steep. We're going to have two groups, an A group and a B group. And they have a certain rollout time. Say the rollout time would be about 10 o'clock. And there's a cue sheet that shows about 45 miles or so. What's the number one thing, if you are a new group rider, what's the number one thing that's going to go ahead and give that group a really poor impression of you? Anybody out there? If you said showing up just as the group is rolling out and expecting them to wait for you, give yourself a gold star, a pat on the back, and for God's sakes, don't ever, ever do it. Okay? From a standpoint of a ride leader, I've ridden plenty of rides. I've led plenty of rides in the past. There's nothing that will annoy a group of riders more than someone who shows up a minute past rollout time and asks you to stop and wait as you're rolling out of the meeting spot. So don't do it. I once had a professor who told us that if you're on time, you're late. If you're on time, you're late. And that that has stuck with me for years and years and years and years. And in almost every circumstance out there, it is 100% correct. You need to be there, especially if you're driving there, and even more so if you're riding there, because riding is much much less predictable than driving. You know, flat tire or legs not feeling good or just taking a side street or what have you. If you're riding there, even if you're driving there, you need to get there early. All right, you need to get there early so that you're able to get yourself kitted up, particularly if you're driving. Get your bike assembled if you're driving, or get your bike checked or whatever, tires pumped, all that kind of stuff. Get yourself warmed up. And by warming up, I don't mean you are standing there, you know, talking with your buddies. That's all well and good. I don't mean you're also just tooling around the parking lot, although that does help. I'm talking about get your joints and muscles moving before you jump on the bike. Now, obviously, if you've ridden to the ride, you don't need to worry about kitting up. You don't need to worry about getting your bike assembled. You don't need to worry about warming up, because obviously if you've ridden, you're already warmed up. What you do need to be concerned about with is just getting there and getting there on time, ready to roll out at the appointed time. And that's the absolute bottom line here. When the clock strikes 10 in our example, you better be ready to roll. Because if the ride leader and the group is starting to take off and you're still putting on your shoes and your helmet, and suddenly, oh, hang on, guys, I gotta fill water bottles. Ugh. You are going to get left at the shop or at the park or at the meeting point or whatever. And I don't blame the group for that. Be courteous, get there on time, do them all a favor. Now, you've gotten there, you've gotten yourself warmed up, your bike's all ready to go, you're ready to rock and roll. You've got a few minutes left. What do you do? Well, here's a good thing to start with. Talk to the ride leader and find out the information that we talked about a few minutes ago. But also start communicating with the group. Okay? Talk about how they handle various things. How do they handle rolling out of stop signs? Do they announce traffic? Do they announce traffic is clear? Do they call out cars behind or to the left or right? Do they point out potholes? What are their hand signals for stopping, for slowing, for pointing things out, etc., etc.? All right, communicate with that group. Because while you're out on the road, you will be continuing to communicate with them, and because they are actually trusting you, and you are trusting them. That is one of the basic tenets of group riding that a lot of beginners haven't quite grasped, and truly, a lot of advanced, even advanced level, solo cyclists have not grasped that on a group ride, you are trusting your riding partners as much as they are trusting you, all right? And there has to be trust throughout that group. Otherwise, the group is not going to function well, and it's going to be a tough ride, all right? Part of trusting each other involves verbal and visual cues, as we discussed, pointing out and calling out potholes, objects, sticks, ruts, cars. To the left, to the right, front, back, you know, animals that run into the road. It's a particularly good time of year for squirrels on the road, and hitting a squirrel can be some pretty bad news, especially on a road bike at higher speed. So consider that your communication with the group is not only your own safety net, but the safety net of the entire group. So communicating with the group is of utmost importance and should be one of the things that you try to initiate as soon as you start, as soon as you hit the parking lot. And as soon as you start conversing with the group, try to get a feel for it and see what they're all about. Okay? The next thing we're going to cover here, right after I take a very quick break, is going to be how to keep yourself and your group riders or your riding partners as safe as possible, and how to create a very trustworthy environment, both between you and them. And we'll cover that in just a moment. Okay, we're back. And keeping yourself safe, along with the rest of the ride, is the number one important thing to think about on a group ride. Sure, you may have your own goals and your own needs and wants when you come to a group ride. Maybe you want to gain some climbing skills. Maybe you want to gain some general group riding skills and the ability to draft and things like that. However, none of that really matters if you suddenly go home from the group ride with a fractured collarbone because you or somebody in the group was not being predictable or not being safe. So, tips to stay alert or to stay predictable and stay safe. The number one thing is to stay alert. Okay, I gave it away a moment ago. Stay alert. Don't daydream. You are not the only one out there this time. There are people in front of you. There are people behind you. There are people all around you. And they are trusting you to remain safe and alert and predictable and not daydream. And as I just said, ride predictably. That means do not suddenly swerve left or right. Do not suddenly grab a handful of brake, which we'll go over in just a moment. Don't yell out randomly. Don't suddenly ratchet up the pace from behind and pass on the right-hand side of the shoulder, and etc., etc. Be predictable. Be predictable, be steady. This is where a lot of your training comes in. If you've been riding on your own, that steady state kind of training, your cadence skills, things like that are coming into play in the ride predictably category. And that's going to be it's going to go a long way towards keeping you and the rest of the group safe. Okay. Part of riding predictably here will be not overlapping wheels. And by overlapping wheels, I'm meaning if you find yourself running up on the cyclist in front of you, if you imagine you're in a pace line, you're a couple riders back, and you find yourself, you're up a slight rise, you find yourself running up the wheel in front of you, closing that gap very quickly. Don't slide your front wheel in right next to their rear wheel, all right? Because any little movement they make may hit your front wheel and might take you out. Not them, you, all right? If a rear wheel hits a front wheel, the front wheel always loses, okay? Remember that. If a rear wheel hits a front wheel, the front wheel always loses, all right? And it's not necessarily the responsibility of the rider in front of you to watch out for you. They're watching out for you by, you know, scanning the road in front of them, riding safely, riding predictably, not grabbing the brakes, etc., etc., but they're not responsible for your positioning behind them. All right, the golden rule in a race is if your handlebars are behind mine, I own you. Okay, and you react to me. I don't react to you. All right, there is a courteousness of looking backwards and seeing, who's back there, what they're doing, where they're at before you do something, but it doesn't always happen. So always, again, be alert as to what's going on in front of you. All right, and don't overlap wheels. If you're going to overlap somebody else's wheel, do it with a couple of feet, a foot or two is fine. A couple of feet to spare. That way, if they swerve around something, if they look behind them and swerve, whatever the case may be, you don't go down. Because your front wheel will lose every time. All right, so don't overlap the wheels. It's not a smart thing to do. And as I just mentioned, people who tend to look backwards over their shoulder tend to swerve. And they actually tend to swerve in the direction that they are looking. So if you're looking back over your left shoulder, you're likely to swerve a little bit to the left into the lane here in the States, or actually into the shoulder in Britain, if I remember correctly. I digress. Anyway, though. The reason you will swerve to the side that you look is because your big, fat melon head is about 8 pounds. And moving that 8 pounds off of the center line of the bike will tend to essentially counterweight the bike and start steering it in the direction that you move it. It's the same as shifting your body weight when you try to initiate a curve, initiate a turn. had a momentary brain fart there. must be the rain. I digress again. We really having trouble staying on topic today. Your big old melon head, if it's coming off the midline of the bike, will initiate a turn just like your body weight will if you are in a sweeping bend. So the way we counteract this, if you're looking over your left shoulder, your head is turning to the left, what you're going to do is you're going to straighten your left arm. All right, you're in a good position anyway on your bike. I hope your elbows are a little bit bent. As you look over your left shoulder, straighten your left arm a little bit. That counter steering will help to keep you on a straight line. Alternatively, you can look down underneath your armpit to see what's behind you. It may not work if you have a baggy jersey or a gilet, a rain jacket, a rain cape, a rain vest, whatever you want to call it. Anything that obstructs your vision that way. Or if you just have poor neck flexibility for that matter, you may not actually be able to see under your armpit to see what's behind you. All right, so look behind with caution, that next point, basically. Another way to make sure that you're predictable and safe is to focus on the riders in front of you, not their wheel, not that rear wheel, which will come over and take out your front wheel. And the reason we watch the riders' bodies in front of us is because if we look straight ahead at their back and we watch them, our peripheral vision can see around them. Peripheral vision is excellent at seeing movement and seeing things that might possibly cause us trouble up ahead. Peripheral vision, as I said, is much more tuned to movement, so it's great for animals, cars, things like that. But you can also be looking through the person in front of you looking for road hazards. Big potholes, speed bumps, white lined crosswalks, things like that. So looking at their wheel many times, if you're only watching that rear wheel in front of you, you may not see something until you're right on top of it. And then suddenly you have to become unpredictable to make an evasive maneuver to escape that kind of hazard. Or in some cases, you may not be able to even escape that hazard in the case of a car or a deer or something of that nature. So always, always, always be looking at the back of the rider in front of you, using your peripheral vision to look past them or through them, and never, 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 never stare at that rear wheel. It's not going to do any good. Okay. Predictability in terms of braking, as I had said earlier, we'd talk real quick about it. Do not brake unless necessary. And if you have to brake, feather the brake. Don't grab a fistful of brake unless you can. There's no way to avoid it. If you need to panic stop, you need to panic stop, and that's fine. But if you have to slow down or scrub speed, learn how to feather the brakes lightly and use the rear brake to feather speed instead of grabbing a handful of brake. Better yet, if you're in a pace line or something of that nature, if you're needing to scrub a little bit of speed, simply move out of the draft in front of you and sit up higher on the bike. Wind resistance will help to naturally slow you, and that's a great, predictable way to scrub a little bit of speed instead of jamming on your brakes. Okay, and perhaps the most important thing about being predictable and riding safely is simply to relax. Easier said than done, I'm sure. Everybody's looking at their iPhone or looking at their computer right now and going, yeah, that's real easy to say. It's real easy for him to say to relax. Well, yes and no. If you're familiar with a group, there should be no reason why you can't relax, provided they're a safe group and you don't have to worry about their actions or anything else. However, if it's a group you're new to, you're not familiar with their mannerisms, their little competitions, or anything else, relaxing can be very difficult. But take it upon yourself to just try and let your shoulders drop, let them relax, keep your neck relaxed, don't tighten the jaw, just basically stay loose on the bike, and you'll be more predictable than one of these guys who's ridden with that group for 20 years, but is all tensed up and all jacked up and all crazy and ready to go. Okay? So, no matter what it takes, no matter what the case is, you know, be cool. For those of you who are old enough, be like the Fonz. Be cool. Hey! Just chill, relax, take it easy, sit in, see what it's about, and you'll come through just fine. Because you will be predictable and you will be riding safe. And you know, by virtue, the people around you will also be riding safely as well. Okay? So, we've covered predictability and safety. We've covered communicating with the group. You've gotten there on time. You've checked out the route. You've gotten there on time. Now you're riding predictably and safely with them. You're starting out well. I say this with the utmost. The word I'm looking for is actually escaping me right now, but one of the most important things, and I say this with the utmost of apologies, I guess, to all of you out there who are listening to this. You guys are going to do very poorly the first couple group rides you're on. And I'm not doing that to discourage you, and I'm not saying that to really make you sound like you are like you're a loser or anything like that. But you need to be able to take pointers, and you need to be able to take criticisms. Every group is a little different, and a lot of those groups will have their own special protocols for, you know, calling out things in the road or turns or anything else. The first few times you go on rides, you have to be ready to learn, you have to be ready to take criticism, and you have to be ready to accept advice and accept pointers from people in that group. All right? If you don't have a thick skin, I guarantee you're not coming back to that group ride. All right? I can recall a specific couple of instances where I've led rides that had very new riders to the group riding scene or to the club scene. And they showed up with very little expectation. And thankfully, in most cases, they showed up ready to take a little bit of criticism and a little bit of a few pointers. In some cases, in fact, in two specific cases I can remember, they didn't have thick skin. They didn't want to take pointers, and subsequently they never went on a group ride again. And that's a terrible shame. I say this just to warn you that the first group rides you go on, you may not be good at them. You may get dropped. You may feel like the fifth wheel. You may feel like you are, you know, you don't belong. Keep trying, all right? Keep trying to learn. And you know what? Even ask other people in the group to help teach you, to show you, to learn from them what it means to be a good group rider. I guarantee you that they'll be willing to teach you. And to be perfectly honest with you, if they're not willing to teach you, that's not a group you probably want to be riding with. All right? That's just sort of the way it is. All right? So, you've checked out your group ride. You've gotten there on time. You communicated with a group. They all trust you. You trust them. You go out. You rode predictably, and you were safe. You took a few pointers, and you took a few things away from it, and you decided, well, maybe I'll come back to this group next week. Here's one final step for you. Share that with some other people. Get some other people out there. Get some other people out there joining those kind of group rides. Get them out there if they're afraid to ride, and try to get them out and show. Say, hey, man, these people aren't too bad. This is how you do it. All right? So I really, really hope that this information has been beneficial to you, particularly if you are a beginner or a new cyclist, or, you know, even if you're an old school guy and your old hat at this and you've been logging solo miles for years and years. Don't be afraid to get out on those group rides, man. They're great things. You can learn a lot from them. You can meet a lot of great people on them. And you just need a few simple tips to really keep yourself safe, really keep the group safe, and you'll go out and you'll have a great time. You'll get a lot of fitness out of it. You'll get a lot of skill out of it. You will make a lot of friends very quickly. So thank you all for listening. Again, check me out on iTunes and give me a positive rating if you're there. Check me out on the website, tailwind-coaching.com. You can check me out on Facebook at Tailwind Coaching, or you can email me, coachrobdc@gmail.com. If you're looking for coaching information, I will be revamping my coaching offerings, one-on-one offerings, in the next couple weeks. I still have a couple of slots open. I believe I have 2 slots open for summer. So if you want one of those slots, get a hold of me very quickly before they disappear. All right. Thank you all for listening. Keep the rubber side down. Keep the soft side up. Go out there, get fast, get strong, get lean, have fun, and I will talk to you all very soon.